Hey, Cashew on all the socials. I don't know, I can follow AWOD. Bundle of energy, my friend. Bundle of energy, that AWOD. God, he did say something at the end of his show. Game 7, best words in sports. And that's what we got coming up in the NBA. I've loved these NBA playoffs. And a couple of years from now, we might be talking about the Wizards in a situation like this. And we know we're not there yet. But, I mean, man, if you look at what we've had these NBA playoffs, it has been, look, not every game, I understand, is going to be a game that you watch and say, yep, it's close today. Yep, we got a close one again. Like, you're going to have blowouts in the NBA playoffs, but we have had so many good series as a whole. Like, that's really the big thing. It's like, man, you just got to sometimes sit back and go, okay, what does the series look like? Is it back and forth? Is it going to be, you know, stretched out seven games? Is it still, there's a level of unpredictability there? And yeah, you've had some teams that are overmatched too. Like, we knew the Lakers had no shot against the Thunder. We knew that the Sixers, after about that first game and a half against the Knicks, you went, oh God, this thing's done. But, you know, the Spurs closing out the Timberwolves last night. You got the Pistons forcing a game seven against the Cavs as the Knicks kind of just sit and wait. The Thunder sat and waited. So the two teams that have already gone to the Eastern and Western Conference Finals swept and just kind of sit back. And now comes the debate, right? Obviously, the Spurs have moved on. So we know it's Spurs, Thunder, Western Conference Finals. But then there's the East. The Pistons already went through one seven-game series, came back from a 3-1 deficit. Now they're going to have to do this again and go to another game seven against the Cavs. And the debate of rest versus, you know, rust, or well, I guess it's not actually that. It's rust versus play. Whatever, you know what I mean. Look, we could look at this either way. You can look at it and say a team sitting and resting if you're dealing with some injuries. It's good. You sit back and, you know, give yourself a chance to recover. Just chill, you know? And then there's, is a team staying in a rhythm? You've got your routine. You've got that playoff intensity and that mindset. That also can be something that's a factor. Like, I always go back and I look at the Nats. When the Nats won their World Series, when they were 19-31, what was the big thing that helped them? The big thing that helped them was that they were in playoff mode from May on. Like, we're a couple weeks out from essentially, it might be right around where they were 19-31. Maybe we're a little bit farther than that. But you watch a team that has to go through that mindset of just, we got to keep winning to stay alive. Backs against the wall over and over and over again. And when you have that mindset, it can make you more intense. It can make you a team that's a little more dangerous. We're not going to know until these series actually start, but the one thing I do know is that we've had some really, really good NBA playoff series. We've had some stinker games. I understand that. And, you know, the Knicks made it easy against the Sixers, and, you know, there were some of those there. But, I mean, hell, even in the first round, right? Lakers, Rockets, it's 3-0, and then you think the Rockets are going to make a series out of this, and it dragged on a little bit. But, you know, look, the one thing I'll say about the Spurs and where they are, man, the Spurs are right on that cusp. And if you look at how the Wizards are rebuilding, it goes Thunder, that's the next stage. The Spurs are in that make the big jump, trying to compete for a championship, but not quite there yet with the experience. And then the Wizards are in the get all the young pieces together, put this whole thing together, and then you start to get the playoff experience, and then you get to a point where you're talked about as a contender if you develop the talent the right way, if you build things up, if you get to a point where, you know, everything kind of clicks and comes together. It's a process. Look, we know it's a process, right? But you kind of see these blueprints that are being built, and you see these blueprints that exist, and they're continuing to, you know, show us that, like, that's how you build a team in the NBA today. I mean, it really is. We're at the point now where that's really how you build a team in the NBA. And, I mean, the Timberwolves last night, if you didn't stay up and watch it, the Timberwolves loaded up on Wemby. And why wouldn't you? I mean, this guy's a future MVP. Probably going to be the face of the league at some point, right? The guy. So what happens? Well, Stephon Castle and De'Aaron Fox combined for 28 of the 36 first quarter points for the Spurs. So Wemby's kind of taken out of it a little bit. Okay, you got other guys that can do it for you. And I think that's why if you look at, you know, the way the Spurs have built their team and the way that this thing has been constructed, yes, Victor Wembanyama's your guy. You got to have that guy in the NBA, right? You got to have that MVP. To be a championship contender, to be a team where we talk about it, say they could win a title or they're going to win a bunch of titles or whatever, however we want to talk about it, you got to have that dude in the NBA, right? It's like in the NFL, you got to have a quarterback. You have to have that first. but you still have to have other talent around them. And if you look at where the Spurs are and what they've built, yeah, Victor Wembanyama's at the top of the depth chart there. He's the top of the list. He is the guy, future MVP, everything. But San Antonio's got a lot of other pieces that they have, too, that also click, that are also a part of this. And, I mean, they're so good that they have a guy like Dylan Harper coming off the bench who was, I mean, he's a guy that could be a future all-star in this league. Keldon Johnson's sixth man of the year, and the guy could start for a lot of teams in the NBA. They have depth. They have talent, which also goes to, if you're looking at how the Wizards should approach this draft, don't make it about fit. Make it about best talent. Make it about the guy that you see that has the highest ceiling, which I've been having some conversations with some people behind the scenes, NBA people that kind of leaned in a new direction here, I think, where this could go. But let me tell you something. This is how you want to build a team, is what the Spurs are. 20-0 run in the second quarter. They never looked back. They led by 34. And yeah, we knew the thing was done. We knew this thing was over. But, I mean, this now what we've got coming up, God, the NBA has needed rivalries for so long. Like, we have missed rivalries in the NBA. And for anybody, right, that's kind of sat around and gone, man, the NBA, I miss the old days. I miss the 90s basketball, which there's a lot of nostalgia about the 90s. Go back and watch these 80 to 78 games. You're not going to miss a lot of that. There was not better basketball back in the 90s. But it did feel like it was much more competitive and a little heated. Like, here's the thing. We don't want teams playing each other that look like they like each other. We don't want fights all the time breaking out. You don't want to turn into like everybody sits back and looks at the bad boy Pistons and they're like, oh yeah, remember how tough they were? No, it was like watching a football game. That's not basketball, okay? Like, I know that's going to make a lot of old heads upset, but like really, the tackling guys midair and watching them do cartwheels, it's not football. We want to watch that. We want to watch football. You want to watch real basketball, but you also want to see a physical game. You want to see a competitive game. You want to see two teams that don't like each other and players that don't like each other. And yeah, if they're up in each other's face, not actually throwing punches, but if there's a little nose-to-nose like, hey, man, yeah, you know you, no you. Come on, come on, no you. Where really it's like the two dudes in high school and the teachers are holding them back and then they're running their mouth because they know, well, no one's going to actually let us fight so we can look tough. That's what an NBA fight generally is, but that's all right. It's still something. That's good enough. I don't need fights all the time. But having Spurs-Thunder in the Western Conference Finals, it was predictable, it was expected, and this is going to be a start of something we see for a while. The East is really wide open, which is great for the Wizards, because if you're the Wizards, you can look up and say, we, you know, keep climbing, keep building the way the Spurs and the Thunder have. We've got an opportunity to get to the second round of the playoffs relatively quickly, get to the Eastern Conference Finals relatively quickly if everything works, you know, player development, guys stay healthy, things like that. In the West, oh my God, man, you're competing with the Thunder and the Spurs for like the next decade. I mean, let's be honest with ourselves. The Thunder are 8-0 in the postseason. The Spurs are 8-3 in the playoffs. Now, the Spurs did go 4-1 against the Thunder in the regular season. They won 62 games. And yes, the Thunder won 64. And yes, they're both really good. But it's the playoffs. And there's one thing that you always tend to see carry over. It's playoff experience even more than a great regular season. Because, you know, we've seen this time and time before in the past, right? And the Spurs in the previous era, the Duncan era, we saw this a lot. They didn't care about the regular season as much. Because they'd already had their big breakthroughs and they built up a team that has this, you know, experience in the playoffs. And it was all about being healthy and prepared and ready for the postseason. So that's what really when it mattered, right? You see teams turn it up a notch in the playoffs. This Spurs team doesn't have that experience yet in the playoffs. The Thunder do. And even though the Spurs are the best matchup, they're not beating the Thunder. Not this year. Next year is when we really start looking at it. And by the way, if you're into dabbling at all, OKC is a heavy favorite. I looked at DraftKings, and OKC is like minus 260 to win the series. So for those of you that don't know or care, I'll just tell you, they're heavy favorites. And there's a reason why. There's a reason why the Thunder are still heavy favorites in this series. They've been there before. Now, it doesn't mean San Antonio is not a great team. It just means that experience absolutely translates over to the NBA playoffs versus the regular season. It's a different animal. It's completely different, which is funny because there's an exact quote from Dylan Harper after the game last night where he said, yeah, we're walking into Monday and it's a different animal. And I swear to God, I did not look at that and then say that reference. It just popped in my head and it was right there in my notes that I had. But like that, that's what we're talking about. The Spurs know, like, this is different. And here's the thing too. If you're the NBA and you want to have competitive playoff series and rivalries and repeat matchups year after year in the playoffs, it makes the regular season more meaningful because every time the Thunder and Spurs play each other, they're not going to like each other. And that's great for the league. So you want to have that. But what you also have is two fan bases in San Antonio and Oklahoma City that want you to know that they're good fan bases. I mean, they are two of the loudest places to play in the NBA. It's a college atmosphere. And like this whole thing about, oh yeah, you know, big markets and the Knicks or the Lakers and all, we're past that point in this world now where like you need to play in a big market to get the real exposure. Like remember back in the day when Notre Dame always had the advantage in football? It was like, well, they're on NBC every week, national TV. Now everybody's, you can watch anybody. Like national TV doesn't mean what it used to. National anything doesn't mean what it used to. This show right now is national in its own way. Like we're going to talk about DC sports sometimes, but let's be honest, right now the NBA is the big thing and everything else is quiet. But like, you know what I mean? Like anybody can access all of this, any game, any show, anything from anywhere. So if you're watching the Spurs and Thunder and going, wow, this is a great matchup. Too bad these teams play in smaller markets. Who cares? I mean, really, who cares? Because you want a great atmosphere. You want great fan bases if you're the league. And if you're just watching this as a fan, you want great teams. You want teams that are built for longevity. I mean, the Spurs and Thunder check every box except it's not New York or Boston or L.A. or any of these top five markets in the country. At that point, you know what you're talking about? Here's what we're talking about. Population. We're talking about the amount of people that live in that city. That's what that comes down to. So, like, none of this matters anymore at this point. But I will say this, Victor Wembanyama can absolutely elevate his profile. He can absolutely elevate his profile as we move forward in this series. Because now it really is about everybody else. Because, like, Eastern Conference, Western Conference Finals, that's it. It's not like, well, I watched the playoff game last night. Casual NBA fan doesn't really want to watch tonight. I got other things to do or whatever. Now it's like you're going to have the final four teams in the NBA. The Thunder, the Spurs, the Knicks, and whoever wins game seven tomorrow between the Pistons and Cavs. So it's going to be a more concise audience. Everybody's going to sit there and want to watch that game if you want to watch any playoff basketball. The spotlight's going to be on that, going to be on SGA, going to be on Wemby. It's great for the league. It's great for the league. I mean, the NFL's gone through this transition a little bit too. Now, Patrick Mahomes isn't obviously out of the picture, but the Chiefs were out of the picture in the playoffs last year. And the AFC's pretty loaded, and they may have a real tough time getting back to the playoffs again this season. I know it sounds crazy, but look at the AFC. It's pretty loaded. But you had the NFL at a point where they're starting to add all these extra new faces, right? We're seeing this in the playoffs where it's, you know, newer, younger quarterbacks. It was Jaden Daniels 2 years ago. It was Drake May this past year. Bo Nix to a point before he got hurt with Denver. And, you know, you start going down the list and realize, oh, there's a lot of young talent in the NFL, and the NFL is going to want to market that talent. And in the NBA, this is similar now, right? We always talk about, like, who's going to be the face of the league after LeBron. And don't tell me somebody else right now. It's not. LeBron is still the face of the league in the NBA. He may not be the best player in the NBA anymore, but the dude's 41 years old and playing at a level that most players would dream of. But at some point, he is going to retire. He's still the most recognizable. He's still a household name, all those things. That's what makes you the face of the league. He still is. But the NBA's got a thing now going on. And it's who's next? Who's going to be that guy? And the only way that you really accelerate yourself into that level is playing meaningful playoff games, doing it consistently, winning, and also having a level of a personality. And Victor Wembanyama's got all that, where all around the country, people look at this guy and go, whoa, right? Like, you don't have to be a basketball fan. You see him and you recognize him, right? And if you don't, you ask who he is. Who is that guy on TV right there? He looks like an alien. Well, convenient enough, his nickname is actually the Alien. Or Alien. Do we know for sure if it's the Alien or Alien? Metal Chris, do we know for sure?
I don't know. I think it just depends on context.
Okay. All right. I feel like we can go with either. So I think it works. But we'll go with the Alien. I think it makes the most sense. Or Wacky Waving Inflatable Arm Flailing Tube Man, if you want to go that route. That's, every time I see one of those outside of like a car dealership or an oil change place or something, it's all I think of is Victor Wembanyama and Chet Holmgren, who, by the way, will be matched up against each other and don't like each other in this series. I can't wait. I cannot wait for this series. Even if you're not a big basketball fan, watch this. Watch this series. It's going to be so damn good. Cannot wait. And a game 7 coming up tomorrow. Cavs, Pistons. Ooh, I love it. Listen, everybody knows I love the NBA, but like most people do, playoff basketball is different. And it's just, it brings in even the casual fan. And we're getting the stars you want in the NBA playoffs. You still got the Knicks. And listen, if the Pistons move on, hey, you got a big market team there in Detroit. The Pistons have a hell of a history, too, as an organization.
Are you as excited? I know Game 7 is the best, you know, phrase in sports. Are you as excited about this one, knowing that they're basically playing to see who gets to get killed by the Knicks?
You know, that's interesting that you say that, that you'd look at it and say killed by the Knicks, because if you look at the regular season, the Knicks struggled against a lot of these playoff teams, including the Pistons.
Yeah, but if you look at the playoffs, the Knicks are hot as hell right now.
Sure, sure. I'm totally with you, but I don't know if I would, and I might be wrong. I might be wrong here, but I don't know if I would just write off the Pistons should they advance because of the backs-against-the-wall mentality, 2-7-game series. Now, they could just be worn out, and the Knicks just beat them up, and then that's the way that it goes, but Detroit had success against the Knicks in the regular season. The question is, does it carry over to the postseason too? And that's, you know, again, a different animal. The Knicks have a little bit more playoff experience with this group. So it kind of goes with my whole Thunder over the Spurs.
They're going to be a lot more rested too.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, again, rest or rust? Which one is it? Which one factors in more?
I think you get late in the playoffs, the rest helps.
And for the Knicks getting OG Anunoby, it's definitely going to help because
He's
been hurt. So I think that makes a difference too. Look, I the Knicks are going to be favored in that series. I think the Knicks win that series, but that doesn't mean that it might not still be competitive. But listen, I could be wrong and the Knicks could sweep the Pistons. I mean, it might just be an easy series and the Pistons are worn out.
So you think it's going to be the Pistons that advance?
I do think.
Like you're saying it like you know.
Yeah, you notice I'm saying that on purpose.
Is that your lack of faith in James Harden or actual faith in the Pistons?
That is no faith in the Cavs. That's really what it is. I have no faith in the Cavs because I've seen them continue to fail in the second round of the playoffs every single year. And James Harden, after two solid playoff games, one really good game in Game 5.
That's what they said about Ovi in the NHL playoffs for years.
Yeah,
then
well,
one year he did it. So
if you're going to compare Ovi to James Harden...
I'm just saying, you know, like, sometimes it does happen even though, like...
I know. I know exactly what you're saying, and you're playing the what-if game, and I get it.
I like to do this to you.
And you listen, but that's the best part. This is good. This is why I don't want to sit here and talk to myself the entire time, all right? I like it when you come in with something different. I think it's important to look at it like that. I just think Detroit's going to win. They're a team that's shown us they are. I mean, the thing about Detroit is just overall, they're 4-0 in elimination games this postseason. They came back, obviously, from being down 3-1 to Orlando in the first round. And I get it, right? Orlando, 8 seed. But Orlando was not playing like an 8 seed when they were up 3-1. I mean, that was a good team at that point that it kind of figured things out a little bit. Look, Harden was okay last night, right? I mean, he had 23 points, but he had 8 turnovers. But he even said at the end, see, this is what bothers me about James Harden. This was his quote, Metal Chris, after the game. He said, we never really kicked it into that second level. It was never just a consistent flow at either end of the ball. Like, here's the thing, man. That's an elimination game. You got to kick it into the next level, whatever that is for you. Like, there's no excuses anymore. And this has been the knock on James Harden forever. I mean, going back to the Thunder, but that was a little different because, you know, like, again, he was a sixth man at that point. But you look at Houston in the years and they had those opportunities. He wasn't able to get it through. We've watched him fail in the playoffs year after year with every team that he's forced to trade to. I just don't trust James Harden in a Game 7. And, I mean, even Donovan Mitchell. Donovan Mitchell's had his ups and downs in the playoffs, too, and he was not great last night either. I can't trust that team. Until the Cavs prove otherwise, I cannot trust that team.
Would them winning the Game 7 change your opinion then? Like, and Harden puts up at least decent numbers, we'll say, not just, you know.
I think they
win despite him is my point.
Well, the Cavs can match up well against the Knicks because they got two big defensive bodies that can really make things
hell for them. But would it change your opinion of Harden's legacy? Like, say he comes out and has a 25-point game and just, like, they end up winning, say, a close one, win by 3 or something in regulation, something like that.
So if I were to have a scale, you know, one of those old-school scales right now, and I would put playoff failures on one side of the scale and playoff successes for James Harden on the other, the scale still is much heavier on the failure side of things and the disappearing act. So no, it wouldn't be enough. Now, it would help. It adds to the resume. But if, like, the Cavs go on to the Eastern Conference Finals, they win that, Harden's averaging 25-8, something in that, and they go to the NBA Finals and at least look respectable against the Thunder, then, okay, maybe you can at least point to that and say, yeah, but look at how we played here. It's too much. It's too – listen, it's not easy to shake a reputation right away. It takes a long time to be able to shake your reputation as a person, as a team, as a player, whatever it is, right? Like, everybody's got that friend that's still kind of doing the same thing he did 15 years ago in his, you know, early 20s, and he's like, no, man, now I want to settle down. I don't want to go out to the bars every night anymore. You know, I really want to have a family. And you're like, I hope you do, but I'll believe it when I see it. Get off Tinder and have a real relationship. You know, like, you got to prove that you've actually changed. And it can't just be like a week of it, right? It can't just be a series if you're James Harden, who, by the way, had a horrible first two games of this series, too. So, no, I don't think it's enough for James Harden to totally shake it, but I do think it would go in that direction. I just don't think that's going to happen. And that's ultimately what it is. I just don't see the Cavs putting it together against this Pistons team that's just continued to play well in these elimination games. They're 4-0 in them. So, again, Cavs just keep losing in the second round. I think there's a lot of questions, too, about whether or not Donovan Mitchell wants to continue to be there. I mean, he's going to be up for an extension soon, and whether that actually works out. So that's all the stuff the Cavs have to think about. So I like Detroit in the Game 7 tomorrow. I think that's where that goes. And then it's Detroit and the Knicks are going to be the favorites in that series. But it's been good playoffs. We could have a really good Eastern and Western Conference Finals. All right, Nick Ashew on the Fan. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Game 7 tomorrow night. Pistons, Cavs. Maybe in a year or so, we'll talk about the Wizards being in this position. It's not bad. Metal Chris during the break brought up something to me I think is, look, it's a valid point. It's not just Victor Wembanyama who has a chance to be, you know, kind of put himself into that spotlight and rip that face of the league title away from, look, I'm still going to say it's LeBron until somebody else is truly solidified there. Because if people can say, well, it's Jokic, you can argue against Jokic very easily. Not Anthony Edwards. By the way, Anthony Edwards with like 5 minutes left in the game was going and dapping up the Spurs bench during a break. Like, I understand they were going to sub everybody out and the game was over, but wait till the end of the game. What are you doing? I'm going to make a quick prediction. They're going to be Anthony Edwards trade rumors because he, after the game, said that they're not an elite team or that they don't have the championship pedigree or they don't have the championship makeup or something along those lines. I'm obviously paraphrasing, but just
be ready.
Something
about wanting another star on the team, too. He kind of blamed some of it that like he was the only star or something.
Well,
kind of a real, you know, uncool thing to say about your teammates.
That is your way of saying if you want to keep me here, go get somebody else, and you're gonna see a lot of Giannis rumors. It's already started. Giannis to Minnesota is going
to
be one
James
of the
teams.
And it could be James Harden. But you know, you brought up something I think that's a really good point too. That this is also a chance for SGA. And I mean, look, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a great player. He's going to be a 2-time MVP because he's going to win it again this year and deserves all of it. But he's not the big personality and the unique personality, I guess, that like Victor Wembanyama is, to where I think that's what makes Wemby possibly stand out more. Like, there are more guys that play like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander than Victor Wembanyama. And I think that's the advantage that Wemby has. But like this series, there's going to have a lot of eyeballs. There's going to be a lot of eyeballs on Spurs Thunder. And it's not going to be about like, oh, well, small market teams. No, the Spurs have a rich history. The Thunder, the defending NBA champions, they've got an MVP there. Wemby's going to be a future MVP. Wemby's getting himself into the national spotlight more and more. But you're right, Metal Chris. I think that there is a very good chance that this also helps not just the Thunder, but Shai Gilgeous-Alexander kind of build up his profile there too, where we may see this where it's a few years of it's Wemby and SGA kind of back and forth fighting for who people really think is the face of the league. You got nothing for me? I kind of thought you'd have a rebuttal. Oh, well, you didn't tell me that. I was trying to give you some credit for what you said.
No, right, it's fine. Good. It's good.
Then do your work.
I do have things to finish up behind the scenes.
Yeah,
that
what
I
is
know
it
no
for?
One else
AWOD? It's for AWOD. Who cares? Tell AWOD to kick rocks. I'll text him now. AWOD, Metal Chris is mine now.
I honestly just want to get it done so I can just focus on your
right,
show.
Get
that's
it
the
done.
Nice
get
thing.
It done.
But
you
anyway.
Got to tell me these things. Look, I don't steal people's ideas. I'm going to say
I know,
that
it's
you
all good. No, here's the thing. I think.
No, now I don't want to hear it.
No,
you have to
I just think
work.
This Western Conference Finals has the potential to really, we could be seeing the Knicks face of the NBA. And it depends, you know, say Wemby puts up 50 points in a game one, or say SGA just goes out and just makes this not a close series. You know, like, there's a lot of potential here to go either way. And I don't know, I think you might see some endorsements coming out of what happens in this series.
I mean, that's not wrong. That's for sure. I don't know what, I'd love to see like a Snuggie endorsement for Wemby. Just a
Snuggies.
Giant Snuggie.
I don't know if that's a good product for him.
We've made an extra large Snuggie for Victor Wembanyama, and just watch him like walking up to the arena with just like a giant or
it's
whatever.
Like they shove Shaq inside of a Buick and they try to like show the interior. I'm like, he's the only guy that makes the inside of a Buick look small. What are you doing? Like, what are you guys doing?
Or it shows that even Shaq can fit into it.
He did not fit in there very well.
I want to see Victor Wembanyama drive like a Lamborghini convertible, so like his head is 5 feet above the windshield. That I'd be down for. I'd be okay with that.
I wonder what he does drive, because I'm sure he doesn't fit in most cars anyway. Like, he's got to have something special.
I don't know how somebody like that fits into anything. Maybe a G-Wagon. I mean, I don't know. But I feel like he's the type of guy that doesn't get something really expensive either. I feel like he'd just drive something real simple. But I don't know what would be big and... I don't know.
Leg room, man.
I mean, what he probably should drive is a Bronco and just take the roof off all the time. That's the only way that works.
Like a Wrangler where you just have the top off or something?
A Wrangler or a Bronco. He just has to take the top off all the time. Like, it's raining. Sorry, top's off. I can't fit in anything. Yeah, I mean, how
well,
does somebody...
San Antonio, how much does it rain, right?
Oh, that's true. So he's probably in a good spot. Everybody knows where Victor Wembanyama is because it's the head sticking out of the Bronco or the Wrangler, and he's just like, there. You know, that's I mean, listen, it works for him. So I think that's the way that it would go. Yeah, look, I think there is a chance for some, I mean, just an opportunity for these guys to both really solidify themselves in the NBA. And the NBA is in good hands. The NBA's got a bunch of great, young, talented players, and I think there's a real opportunity there. And look, I don't know what we're going to get out of this NBA draft in terms of what A.J. Abanza or Darren Peterson look like 3-4 years down the road. But I know there's a lot of potential. And the more and more I have conversations with people, you know, around the NBA, just kind of like texts and phone calls and things like that, I'm starting to really realize that the Wizards would be in the best spot being able to get Darren Peterson and more assets. Now, hear me out on this. I don't believe a lot of the rumors that are out there right now, because remember, this is lying season, okay? This is absolutely lying season, the same way that it is for the NFL. It's just transferred over to the NBA. Same tactics. Wizards are doing the right thing. You know, Michael Winger leaving everything open. Will Dawkins leaving everything open. No, we're open to opportunities, blah, blah, blah. And the reports that the Jazz want to trade up for A.J. Abanza and that A.J. Abanza doesn't want to leave Utah, I believe some of that, okay? But here's what I don't believe, because if it's the case, I would take the opportunity right now if I'm the Wizards. If the Utah Jazz are actually willing to trade up and give Ace Bailey and the number 2 overall pick and like another draft pick, which is, again, this is more getting thrown around as like a potential idea than I don't know how much this is really solidified, because Danny Ainge is the same guy. Remember that years ago when the Boston Celtics were the team that did what the Thunder have now done, where they collect a bunch of assets and build up a championship contender and still have more draft picks, and it was Danny Ainge and the Celtics that somehow won the lottery, got the number 1 overall pick. They didn't have the worst record by far. It was somebody else's pick. And then they traded down to number 3 with the Sixers, who traded up to get who? Markelle Fultz. And who did the Celtics get? Jason Tatum. So Danny Ainge is the guy that pulled off that heist with the Sixers. I just don't believe that Danny Ainge is the type of GM to look at what the Wizards have and say, I'm willing to give up Ace Bailey, who we didn't know didn't want to go to Utah, actually wanted to go to the Wizards. He wanted to fall to the Wizards at 7, but he was taken at 6. But I don't believe that Danny Ainge is willing to part with him and trade up and give a future first-round pick, all to draft A.J. Abanza. But if you're the Wizards, you want to convince the Jazz that that's who you're going to take, just in case. Just in case. And last minute, if you really want Darren Peterson, then you draft Darren Peterson, but you let the Jazz assume until the very last minute that that's who you want to take. And look, Darren Peterson, A.J. Abanza, both of them, they are absolutely both worthy of a number 1 overall pick. Darren Peterson just has more upside. Darren Peterson has a chance to be a better defensive player. He's a better shooter. The athleticism is there just as much as Abanza. Abanza, look, 42-inch vertically. Like, okay, like the guy can jump out of the gym. That's great. But Darren Peterson was not himself at Kansas, and we know that the cramping and the creatine and the whole, that was a thing. He wasn't even 100% though when he played BYU and A.J. Abanza, and he worked him. I mean, he went at him. And if you go and look at the athleticism before all of the cramping and everything that Darren Peterson dealt with, there's a reason why he's compared to Kobe Bryant. Now, I know it's a dangerous thing. It's a dangerous thing to compare players to somebody like a Kobe, a Jordan. We've seen it a lot. Which, by the way, you never hear somebody say, hey, they're the next LeBron. It's always the next Jordan or Kobe. It's almost like LeBron is a unique player. That's a conversation for another day, but just saying, in case you want to let that marinate for a little while there. But look, Darren Peterson has more upside, and I don't want to hear this like, well, you know, DeBonta fits better on the Wizards roster. They need a wing. They have a bunch of guards. Who cares? Darren Peterson can play the point guard position at an elite level at the NBA level, and it'll be a big body point guard that can also score for you, that can also defend, and you know what you don't need to do? Pay Trae Young. So you don't even have to be tempted. Trae Young will be in a contract year, Darren Peterson out there for a year, and then if you're the Wizards, you say bye-bye Trae Young, or trade him at the deadline to a team and get more assets. Because this front office, Michael Winger, Will Dawkins, they're thinking about more assets. They're thinking about adding more down the road so they can be in a position where the Thunder are now, who are probably going to win another championship and have two first-round picks that aren't theirs in this draft, one of the deepest drafts we've seen in decades in the NBA. So if I'm the Wizards, you absolutely make everybody think that you're going to do anything in this draft. Maybe you'll trade down to six with the Nets. You're not really going to do it, but let people think that you're going to do it. Let teams around the NBA think that you are open for business, and in the end, hope that the Jazz are willing to trade up one spot and get desperate and give you multiple assets. And then maybe you can get the guy you really want all along in Darren Peterson and adding somebody like an Ace Bailey on top of that. Let me tell you something right now. If they do that, that is a heist. And that is just, we should all build a statue of everybody in the Wizards front office if that's the case. I am taking that trade, if it was real, in 2 seconds. I'm doing it instantly. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Nick Ashew on the Fan, at Nick Ashew. On the socials, had a couple days to digest the Commander's schedule. It's also like, it's funny because you have to kind of keep yourself, if you really want to see the reveal all at once, which I feel like at this point people don't, it's like the NFL draft, you got to stay off social media. We had the entire schedule out leaked before the 8 o'clock reveal on Thursday. And look, it's a tough schedule for the Commanders. Let's not kid ourselves. You start on the road at Philadelphia, and then you're at Dallas, and then you got the defending Super Bowl champion Seahawks. And then you go to London. I know it's the Colts. The Colts are a big question mark. But, you know, with that and then another division game against the Giants at San Francisco, Monday Night Football, then a bye with the Eagles on Sunday night after that and the Rams after that. I mean, that's the first 9 weeks of the schedule. That ain't easy, man. I mean, it could go, the reason why I say it could go a lot of ways, I'm not trying to sit on the fence here with this. I just hate the whole win-loss game that we play when it's stupid. I mean, it is, because you could easily ask the question, where are the 49ers health-wise week six? Did the electrical grid affect the 49ers? Which, by the way, was all over those those schedule reveals. I'm actually more excited to see what teams are going to do with their social media teams and the schedule reveal videos and how they put it out on Instagram and TikTok and everything. Like, that's what I care more about at this point, honestly, you know? But, I mean, really, it's a lot of questions across the board. Like, are the Giants... The Giants are going to have a higher floor with John Harbaugh as their head coach, but what does that actually look like, you know? I mean, that's the part of the question here is, like, you don't know what so many of these teams are going to look like. The Colts are a massive question. Does Daniel Jones come back from a torn Achilles and look like Daniel Jones at his worst with the Giants, or Daniel Jones, the Pro Bowler that always plays the Commanders? I mean, they're targeting a week one return for him. Guys have come back from torn Achilles faster. Guys are coming back from any injury now, generally faster, but that doesn't mean anything, right? Like, so there's just not a lot of guarantees in terms of like what these teams are actually going to look like. I have no idea what the Eagles' offense is going to look like week one, let alone week eight. You're going to see them twice at that point. Does it look different from week one to week eight? You know, Jalen Hurts, does the offense look decent early because it's a new coordinator, it's a new system, and Jalen Hurts just... And the Eagles surprise the Commanders with all the receivers they've added, and there's no A.J. Brown, and then by week eight, it starts to regress a little bit. I don't want to sit on the fence in this, but like I'm just being realistic with everybody. The way that you can look at this and say, yes, the teams you are playing, they are not teams like the back end, it's the Cardinals and Titans are probably the two easiest on the schedule for the Commanders. But even then, the Cardinals have a potent offense. They've added Jeremiah Love, who could go off for 150 total yards against them or, you know, whatever. Even if Jacoby Brissett's not great at quarterback for the Cardinals, I mean, you still might have to deal with that. What does the Commanders' defense look like? Then we go to the Texans. Is C.J. Stroud, does he remember how to play football? Or is the defense elite, but C.J. Stroud is still struggling? Yet all of this is just to say that we get really, really worked up. Myself included, I get it. I could be a hypocrite. It was coming out in real time on Thursday. I'm sitting there on 980 going, well, here we go. Here's another one. And, oh, God, this schedule sucks. Oh, my God, I'm losing my mind. Oh, wait, we know nothing. But it's draft grades. It's the same thing, right? It's the same thing as draft grades, where you're going to have some level of an opinion, but it's based on the only information we have in front of us, which is not a lot. It's really not. But what you can do, if you're looking at the Commanders' schedule, is at least look at some of the quarterback matchups, right? Jalen Hurts has a question mark. Dak Prescott, we know, great in the regular season. Got a couple of receivers you can throw the ball to that are dynamic. We get it. Seahawks, well, there's Sam Darnold that you saw against the Rams in the NFC Championship game. There's Sam Darnold that we saw against the Rams in the regular season, which was horrible. Plus, you don't have Clint Kubiak as his offensive coordinator anymore. You know, and then Daniel Jones, like I mentioned. I mean, Jackson Dart week 5 and Brock Purdy, pretty good with that offense. We saw it last year, week 6. I mean, so you start going down the list and the quarterback matchups aren't overly scary for this team, right? Let's even take the division out of it. That means Sam Darnold. Well, what does he look like in this offense without Clint Kubiak? All right. Then next non-division game, the 49ers. Brock Purdy, going to be pretty damn good. Like, say what you want about Brock Purdy, but even from week 11 on last year, that was actually the highest scoring offense in the NFL when Brock Purdy came back from injury. And Mac Jones showed that he could play in the 49ers offense too. So even if Brock Purdy's hurt, like, you're still going to have that. So the 49ers, that's a tough quarterback matchup. Again, only non-division games here. Rams, Matt Stafford, boom. Bengals, week 11. Well, that's Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow healthy? We know what happened the last time the Bengals and the Commanders played on Monday Night Football. So we saw that. Cardinals, Jacoby Brissett, not scared. All right. Titans, Cam Ward, not scared. All right. Texans, C.J. Stroud, it's iffy. Are we going to get good C.J. Stroud or bad C.J. Stroud? All right. Falcons, not scared. It's either Tua or Michael Penix Jr. Who knows at that point? So that's all the way up in the air. Vikings, it's Kyler Murray or J.J. McCarthy. Not really scared. All right. Jaguars, Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence was in MVP finals last year, so you got to respect that. So outside of the division, the quarterback matchups aren't bad. And I think that's what really gives this a lot more hope in terms of where they sit, is that you're not going to be going up against the elite amount of quarterbacks that maybe you did last year. Because if you remember, when they won 12 games in 2024, what was the big advantage the Commanders had? It was a lot of backup quarterbacks. It was some middle-of-the-road guys at best. The quarterback matchups in 2025 versus 2024 was a massive difference. So that's one advantage in this schedule, that outside of the division, where you're going to see these teams every year, it helps to not have this massive group of elite quarterbacks that the Commanders are going to see. And I think that's one advantage to them. In the end, I do think they go over the 7.5 win total if they stay healthy. I know that's not saying much, but I think a 9-win season is a respectable season. High end is probably 10. And that's if the defense is middle of the pack, which can't get much worse than last year, he said, knowing that it could get worse because that's how things go. So we'll see. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Nick Ashew on the Fan. I just saw on Twitter, Fanatics has all the old Commanders jerseys on clearance for like $8. I don't know. I kind of almost think I want to get one. Maybe the old black one, because everybody hated it except me. I might get one. They're like $7.99.
I like the black jerseys too. Everybody gives them crap, but is a metalhead like who only is going to wear black anyway?
Yeah. Do you like the new ones or the old ones you're saying? You're just saying black jerseys in
general? I bought the Jaden Daniels rookie one.
Yeah. It's on sale for like $7.99. I might get one just for the hell of it. Maybe at least a jersey. I'm more of a jersey guy, not a real jersey anymore.
No, I got the expensive, like the one that we are on the field kind.
Yeah.
But so I'm going to buy, like, I don't buy a lot of jerseys, but I was like, the black Jaden Daniels rookie one after the Hail Mary and all. Yeah. I was like, come on, it's just an iconic jersey. And like, you know, even in 5 years, I'll be like, well, that's the rookie one. You know, it's not just the random year one. Like,
I might get one of these. You know, it's like, okay, why not? I think it's one of those why not things, but I'm seeing a lot of these that are way more than that. I mean, there's no way I'd spend. I'm seeing some of them that are still ridiculously priced.
I get the argument people make is it's like it's not our colors, you know, it's the Falcons and Raiders and whatever. But like for wearing, for like something I'm actually going to wear, like I'm not going to wear the other two.
Well, you're saying just a black jersey in general.
Yeah.
People saying that. Yeah, I mean, here's the thing: every team can have a black jersey, though. I mean, really, it works with any team. So, like, to me, well, you know what I've always said? Every team should have a black uniform, period, in any sport. I think in any sport. I want to see more hockey sweaters. All hockey uniforms, just not even just a sweater, everything, all black. Why not?
That's how I was like as a kid, man, because it was hard, because back when I was a kid, like, everybody had the Kings jerseys because Gretzky was on the Kings.
Yeah.
And the other black one was, like, the Penguins, and I was like, well, I'm not wearing that, so, like.
I mean, yeah, man. You know what? There'll be a collector's item. And you're right. The black uniform, at
Canucks,
least you think
the
of.
The Canucks was the other one. They stunk.
Yeah. You think of, I just think of the black jersey and the Hail Mary against the Bears, and that's it for me. And that's the one memory we'll have with those. And
yeah,
I think
but it's like iconic because of that, too, I think, at this point. You know, like, I don't know. I like the black jerseys. I don't think they should be the, you know, every week kind of thing, like alternate between the black and white or something, but.
I also think I was lied to. I don't see anything on here for that actual $7.99 price.
They sell out. They do the old Black Friday thing where you're like, get the TV for $10 and there's one of them.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm seeing a bunch of youth jerseys for $18 even. I don't know. Hey, listen, I would not blame anybody for doing it. It's an era that was short-lived, and it's an era that was, I never had a problem with the old black uniform. But I get why people said it looked like the Steelers or it wasn't great. But I liked it the most out of the other two they had because we all know the burgundy one was maroon. We know the white one was terrible because the numbers were maroon. It wasn't burgundy.
It was cranberry.
It was like a cranberry. People were trying to convince it's actually the same color. No, it's not. It's not the same color. So now they went back to it, and now they've got a better black uniform, and it's good. So,
ever see the clip of Jay-Z and, like, some paparazzi guys bugging him as he gets into some car and he's wearing, like, a pink suit? And the guy's like, hey, why are you wearing a pink suit? Or he's like, it's not pink, it's mauve.
I have not, but that's great.
It's like, come on, man. Like, you're sitting there trying to convince people.
It's like wearing a pink shirt and saying that it's salmon. I mean, yeah. Just give it a fancy name. I mean, have you seen the name of certain colors out there? Like, real names, not just, like,
but
it's ridiculous.
If you're going to wear it, just, like, you gotta lit, you know. You gotta be cool with it. You know, you can't just be like, "Oh no, it's mauve." It's like, nah, just you're wearing what you're wearing. You chose it, whatever, you know.
But here's the thing: that's a great clapback to be, if somebody's making a joke about it. You're like, no, it's mauve.
I love
so
that
bougie.
Line where because Jay-Z's like literally like getting mad at this guy. He's like, "It's mauve. What are you talking about? It's mauve." It's like Jay-Z wearing a pink suit.
That's so great. Honestly, that's the perfect response to anybody saying that. So I have not seen that. Now I'm gonna need to look that up.
I'll send it to you in a minute.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's pretty easy to find. I'm sure it's all over YouTube.
Sure it is. I could probably type Jay-Z mauve. I don't know how to spell it. MAUVE. Did I spell it right?
Sounds about right.
All right. So we'll guess that, and I'll probably look it up and see if I can actually find it. So, but yeah, man, I think it's it's worth buying one of these and just remembering. Right, it's like, oh yeah, that short era that's there. I just don't see them anywhere. I think I was lied to. So I'll keep the search going though. Oh, they have I won't fit in a infant game romper is not going to work for me. So I don't think I'll fit into that. So that's probably not gonna hit. There's always some old stuff there. The new stuff's good, but some of the old stuff's fun too. I don't know. It's a short era, and we can just laugh at it. Nick Ashew on the Fan.